Welcome to the Midday, coming to you live from our Buck studio today. I'm Norman Gilliland with pianist Philippe Bianconi. Welcome.
Thank you.
Pleasure to have you here again. This is at least your third visit over the course of the last 9 years.
That's right.
And Philippe Bianconi is in town to play with the Madison Symphony Orchestra this weekend, Friday night at 7:30, Saturday night at 8, and Sunday afternoon at 2:30. And the program includes a piece by a contemporary composer. It's called Inspiring Beethoven. It's by Kevin Putz. And there will also be the massive, autobiographical symphonic poem Ein Heldenleben of Richard Strauss. And then the centerpiece of the concert is the Piano Concerto No. 4 by Beethoven. And we'll be getting some insights into that. What a treat to actually have you sort of talk us through some of it. We were talking just before we went on the air, Philippe, about if you were to apply an adjective to this concerto. We have Emperor, of course, for the fifth and last concerto, but how about this one, number four?
Well, I want to say I love all five piano concertos of Beethoven, but for different reasons, but this one is definitely my favorite. It is the one that touches me the most because I think it's the most intimate and the most poetic of all five concertos. And it has that really special quality, you know, that really touches the heart. And not just in the slow movement, but all the way through the piece.
And it almost, you could say, has two slow movements. I mean, it starts with you at the piano. That's the first thing we hear. It's as if it were a slow movement, but it begins that way.
Yes, the piano starts just alone with no orchestra accompaniment and exposes the main theme of the first movement, and then the orchestra picks up, and it's very quiet. It's a very, yes, very quiet beginning, and it sounds almost like it is a slow movement. Maybe I can show a little bit. So this is how the piece starts, and it's just the piano alone. And then the orchestra continues and goes into a big tutti without the piano, and it goes like this. It's such a wonderful beginning, and it immediately sets the character of the whole piece, that very poetic, luminous character.
Well, here's a strange question. As the soloist in a piano concerto, especially, you know, these full-scale concertos by Beethoven, when you practice, do you ever play the orchestral part as well so you can kind of get a feel for the context of the solo?
Oh yes, mm-hmm. Very much so. I study the full score, you know, and I try to memorize which instrument is playing what. And when I practice, I do not all the time, but I do occasionally play some of the orchestra because it's important to get the feel of the whole piece. And it is particularly important in this concerto because, most of the time, especially in the first movement, the main themes are played by the orchestra, and the piano just weaves around, you know, ornamentation and arabesques around the main themes.
Almost like the tradition from before Beethoven's time of the harpsichord, kind of embellishing a concerto.
Yes, a little bit like that, and. I just want to play, this was the first theme that I just played, and which is really the main theme of the whole first movement. And I want to play two other themes that are being exposed by the orchestra without piano in the big tutti I was mentioning, this is the second theme. And then there's another one which comes after a big crescendo, and it's this beautiful, gorgeous, lyrical theme. And as I said, most of the time during the concerto, these themes are played by the orchestra, by instruments of the orchestra, and the piano is ornamenting around them. And most of the time in the upper register of the piano, which gives this really clear, luminous color to the piece.
It's obvious to say, I suppose, that it has Beethoven's stylistic fingerprints all over it, doesn't it? I mean, from the opening, which sounds almost like an anthem or a hymn, to this large kind of propulsive theme in the orchestra.
Yes, yes. This is very Beethovenian, and the way he builds the crescendos towards those, you know, very... majestic expansions of enthusiasm. This is very Beethovenian, absolutely.
And then by the time we get to the second movement, in a sense, it's almost like a second movement. But in some ways, it's more powerful than the rather modest beginning of the first movement, which is unusual.
It is more powerful. And of course, during the first movement, we've been through very poetic moments, more virtuoso ones too. I mean, there's the first movement has its share of virtuosity, you know. Beethoven did not forget that he was writing a concerto, and a concerto, you know, is supposed to enhance the virtuosity of the soloist. But the second movement is very striking and really different from any other slow movements of Beethoven concertos. First of all, it's rather short.
Yes, quite short.
It's almost like an introduction to the finale. And what's really striking is that dialogue between the orchestra. Actually, it's just the strings in the slow movement, and the orchestra is starting with this very strong, almost angry statement. To which the piano answers with a very soft pianissimo phrase, which is like a prayer. And the orchestra comes back, again, very angry. And the piano answers back. Etc. Until, after a while, the pleading melody of the piano becomes convincing enough for the orchestra to start, calming down. Mm-hmm. And after a while, the orchestra starts playing that same rhythmic statement, but softer, and then going even softer to a pianissimo. Etc. And then after the orchestra has completely calmed down, the piano can finally sing freely this beautiful melody on the upper register.
Well, let me back up for just a moment and ask about the cadenza, which typically would be at the end of the first movement.
Mm-hmm.
Beethoven provided one?
He provided two.
Take your
which
choice.
Which is great. So we have a choice. And there is one that is very rhythmic and very virtuosic, which I don't like so much. And I chose the other one, which is a little bit longer, but I think more in the character of the first movement. And it develops the main theme. It also has some runs and virtuoso passages. But I always had the feeling that it was more integrated to the general character of the movement.
We'll be back with Filippi Inconi and Beethoven's Fourth Piano Concerto and some other pieces right after this on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Norman Gilliland, back with Filippi Inconi, who is talking us through some aspects of the Fourth Beethoven Piano Concerto that he'll be playing with the Madison Symphony this weekend, Friday and Saturday nights and Sunday afternoon at the Overture Center for the Arts in Madison. Also on the program, Ein Heldenleben of Richard Strauss and a contemporary piece by composer Kevin Putz. It's called Inspiring Beethoven. And we have been dwelling of late on the second movement of this fascinating piano concerto, which is maybe Beethoven's most intimate of the five.
Absolutely.
And the second movement is certainly fraught with beauty and poetic and even introspective moments. And I gather then the piano here is not so much of an ornament as it is in other parts of the concerto, Philippe.
Yeah, definitely here the piano is really, there's an equal dialogue between the piano and the orchestra. And it's wonderful to see how, I just played that very angry statement of the orchestra, and the piano, through his very persuasive melody, very soft melody, is able to subdue the angriness of the orchestra. And at the end of the movement, for the last few bars, they finally get together in a very soft for a very soft ending, and you can just hear in the bass that rhythmic statement that you heard at the beginning, which was very strong, and now it's completely subdued. So it ends very peacefully, and it leads almost immediately, with no break between the two movements, to the finale.
Piano concertos, especially as we get, from Mozart, especially the later Mozart on, seem to me more and more like little operas. you know, where they're certainly dramatic, they're certainly theatrical, and especially in Beethoven's hands. But when you play these, do you have any kind of own program of your own as to a storyline or a narrative or what's going on in this concerto?
Not really. You're so right about that comparison, especially definitely with the late Mozart concertos that are so close to the great operas of Mozart. And with Beethoven also, you have those contrasts and those theatrical gestures, but I don't really try to think of a story or something. I think the music itself is so strong. I mean, the various characters of the music are so defined that you have, it's like, you know, musical characters interacting with each other. And I don't really feel the need to think of, you know, some kind of story. I think the music itself speaks for itself very strongly.
And do you approach the music differently now than as we're talking about this particular concerto, the fourth Beethoven piano concerto? Do you think of it differently now as you would have the first time you played it? A different kind of approach, different things that you bring out now?
Definitely. It's not basically different, but I was 18 when I played it for the first time, so it was a long time ago. And, you know, I've matured, I've aged, so life has taught me many things, and all of this, you know, brings you more insight into the music. And I've always been, from the very beginning, very touched by the poetic quality of this piece, but now I feel it even more. You know, it's deeper, and the more I play it, the more I go year after year, and the more I am moved by this concerto. And I hope that I can bring that out when I perform it. But of course, it's, as I said, so much of it is also in the orchestra. So the interaction of the piano and the orchestra, the conductor and the various musicians is very, very important in this piece.
And the audience and
yes,
everybody involved.
I mean, definitely.
It's a communal experience. And now to the third movement of the Beethoven Fourth Piano Concerto. This is where he delivers the maximum punch and ties everything up.
That's right. It's the most brilliant, of course, of the three movements. And but it still has some very beautiful, quiet, and poetic moments. But it has two main themes, and the first main theme is exposed by the orchestra, and it immediately gives the movement that half popular, half martial character. So here's the theme exposed by the orchestra. And the piano immediately answers back, doing some ornaments around it.
It's almost like another of those Turkish marches, isn't it?
A little bit, yeah.
With kind of off rhythm.
Rhythm,
a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
And
we syncopations.
Forget how big a part militarism was in Beethoven's life. I mean, this is 1808.
That's
and
right.
And the very next year, Vienna would be under bombardment by Napoleon's troops.
That's right. I mean, for the last 10, 15 years, Europe had been at war. Napoleon was all over the place, you know, making war to everybody. So, definitely. You know, it's at the same time very happy. It's a very, very happy movement.
And where does he take us from the march in this movement?
Well, he takes us, there's a development, and there's a really interesting moment where the orchestra and the piano interrupt each other. It's hard to do just on the piano because, you know, it will not sound like it's being interrupted, but the orchestra goes like this. And the piano answers. And the orchestra. Etc. And then there's a a moment with triplets, you know, a transition that goes to the second theme, which takes us back to a more poetic, quiet character. So this is played by the piano, and then the orchestra answers. But soon after, the brilliant character comes back. Etc.
And then I assume there's a razzle-dazzle coda before all is said
and
done.
Yes, and actually there is just one moment which I really love in the coda before the conclusion. You know that martial theme?
Yes.
And there's a moment where it's played very quietly and in a very melodic way. And it's wonderful. I love the way Beethoven can transform the character of a theme. It's the same theme, but
much more sublime look at it.
But it's completely different in character. And then there's a very short but very brilliant coda that ends the concerto in a very strong gesture.
Well, we'll hear some pieces played right here in our studio by our guest, Felipe Inconi, right after this on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Norman Gilliland, back with Felipe Inconi, and our piano, our Mason and Hamlin piano here in the Buck studio, which he has been using to talk us through Beethoven's Fourth Piano Concerto that he'll be playing with the Madison Symphony this weekend. But how about some pieces of your own, Felipe? I mean, not compositions, but some miniatures.
Okay. I thought of playing something by one of my very favorite composers, Schumann. And this is the first piece from Fantasiestück Opus 12. It's called Des Abends.
Evenings.
In the evening, yeah.
Some Schumann. Thank you. Les Abends from the Fantasiestücke of Robert Schumann. Well, we about have to have something French, don't we, Philippe?
That's right. I really wanted to play something by another one of my favorite composers, who's French, Claude Debussy, and it happens that this year is the 150th anniversary of his birth.
So it is.
So lots of things are happening in France around Debussy, and I myself just recorded the complete Preludes, which will come out at the end of August. And so I would like to play one of them, the last one actually, called Feu d'Artifice, which means fireworks.
Yeah, and we're familiar with Debussy's, some of his water pieces, but if you think describing water is hard, think about describing with a piano fireworks.
Well, I think he did it pretty well.
Thank you. Bravo. Was it my imagination, or did I just hear a little passing reference to the Marseillaise in there?
Yes, absolutely. Which, you know, tells us that he was probably thinking of the fireworks of the 14th
sure.
of July.
Yes. That's one of those pieces you just about have to memorize, because you can't imagine being able to read the notes that fast.
Probably not, yeah. You'll have to memorize that. Absolutely.
Now, are you teaching these days in this country?
No. I very often, when I come over here, do master classes, but not on this trip. But I have been doing master classes in various, you know, music schools and universities, and it's always nice to get to besides the performances, to get to know students and work with them. And I like that.
And some recording too, though. You mentioned you have this recording. You've already recorded them, these preludes?
That was just a month ago, and they should be released by the end of August or early September.
Well, Philippe Bianconi has been here in Madison. This is about your fourth visit since 2001.
This is my fourth visit, yes, with the Madison
and,
Symphony.
And I wish I should remember which concerto it was that you played on a recent occasion where the audience applauded at the end of the first movement. And I said afterward, well, I said to you, they knew what they were doing. They were just so
taken
with that.
Oh, yes, that was
movement.
Not last time, but the time before I was doing Prokofiev Third.
Ah, yes. That
and
would
the first movement has a rousing ending. So, you know, it happens that the audience applauds at the end of the first movement.
Is that okay with you?
Oh, absolutely. No problem. No problem
okay.
with that.
I'm glad to hear that. Well, thanks for giving us a rousing finale for the midday today.
Well,
Philippe
thank
Bianconi.
You for having me.
Look forward to your Beethoven Fourth Piano Concerto with the Madison Symphony this weekend.